I think if we just, if Bitcoin stays where it's at with the small community it has, and it's just used as it is now, store value, ETFs, shiny rock under the bed, gold 2.0, like I'll consider it a colossal failure. So we need to build out these circular economies and make sure Bitcoin gets used for commerce everywhere. Really, Bitcoin needs everyone. Bitcoin needs you, and its success is not inevitable. And the more that individuals act, we act collectively in pushing this technology, then the higher chance it is to succeed and the harder it is for the state to snuff it out. We still have a long way to go. A lot of our friends are still being prosecuted. The Tornado Cash guys are still in court. The Samurai Wallet devs are still in court. Not all states or countries have the same assurances about self-custody or mining or these L2 services that we're running. And, you know, like I said, like, these things could change at the drop of a hat. Maybe even this administration changes their tune. If you look at the geopolitical climate, a lot of that stuff could be used as an excuse to back down on us. So, you know, my message to all the builders out there, to the people pushing the software, is like, when we're given an inch, let's take a mile. Let's keep pressing forward. While we have the runway, let's use it. I personally think that we're going to win a lot of battles over the next 4 years, duration of this admin, right? We're going to still lose some. But we certainly have more runway and leeway than we previously did. So let's build, let's build, let's build, let's ship. Let's keep pushing stuff in the right direction.
Greetings and salutations, my fellow plebs. My name is Walker, and this is the Bitcoin Podcast. Bitcoin continues to create new blocks every 10 minutes, and the value of one Bitcoin is still one Bitcoin. If you are listening to this right now, remember, you are still early. Find me on Noster at primal.net/walker and this podcast at primal.net/titcoin. On X, YouTube, and Rumble, just search at Walker America. And find this podcast on X and Instagram at Titcoin Podcast. Head to the show notes for sponsor links. Head to substack.com/@WalkerAmerica to get episodes emailed to you. And head to bitcoinpodcast.net for everything else. Without further ado, let's get into this Bitcoin talk. I don't think I've ever made it through an entire Lex Friedman podcast.
I don't get the appeal either. Like, I'm really not a huge fan.
You know, it's like, respect to him for what he's built. Like, yeah, that's super cool. It's just like that style of like, all right, let me ask you about your mother and how that relates to geopolitics. It's just like, I don't know, man. Like, and this is coming from somebody who like occasionally is like told they have like a weird voice. It's like something about the voice, the vibe is like, it just, you can't listen to it for that long.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. I mean, you know, it's not like that. We don't have like equally boring podcasts in Bitcoin. I got invited on Bitcoin Review with Rodolfo, you know.
He really goes
into the weeds, so technical. But, like, that's really the show you put on as you're trying to get, you know, your 40 hours per week. You know, you got to be listening at all times. You put that on just in time for bedtime, you know.
Dude, everybody always says that show is, like, you know, whatever, like, you know, very boring, like, we'll put you to bed. I don't know. I, like, maybe it's just because, like, even though I'm not super technical, I am somewhat of a nerd, like, I always enjoy that show. Like I would have difficulty falling asleep to it. I like NVK too. Like I feel like he brings a great energy to it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like tongue in cheek, self-aware enough, you know, like he's got like a good read on things, but also, you know, willing to say like, oh, I don't know XYZ. Anyone know more about this, you know? So
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So yeah,
exactly.
We'll be doing that again soon at some point. But yeah, man, I'm just excited. Wherever you want to take the conversation, basically willing to take it. We can talk about Cashew and Zeus. We can talk about some of the new stuff we're doing with Zeus Pay. We're starting to do, you know, digital checkout for goods and expanding our point of sale. We can talk about, you know, what we're doing to onboard a lot of merchants. We got a lot of companies queued up right now that we're going to be onboarding very soon. So hoping to get just
little bit of momentum.
Series of announcements going, but nothing I could say yet, unfortunately.
Oh, you're going to tease me like that. Well, I mean, know, Evan, man. You guys have had quite a, like, I feel like Zeus has been on quite an interesting journey. Cause I was thinking about this. Cause like I've had Zeus downloaded for a while and I was going back and am I remembering correctly? You guys were initially just a way to connect to your node remotely, right? Like that was the original, like,
yeah, that was, you know, that's still most of our lifetime. So
yeah,
let's say we started back in like 2019, the fall, I think. And we're coming up on like 6.5 years now.
Damn.
And we started just like a remote controller. So it started, okay, you know, LND was the powerhouse implementation, right? Still is, but, you know, some of the other ones are catching up. It's getting interesting. So we start with LND. We added Core Lightning. Then we added like LND Hub. Then we added all these other like alternate connection types. So, and you could do like Noster Wallet Connect. And then, of course, the last 2 years, we put the wallet in the phone, the node in the phone, we call it, right?
And just great for memes also.
Yeah, that we just really went crazy with that meme cycle. Which, you know, just shooting the shit with Matt on Citadel Dispatch. You know, have a really long history with that show. And yeah, just people just clung on to it and had a lot of great meme ability. But yeah, still, like, you know, we still have a long ways to go. The node in the phone was like a great way to lower the barrier to entry into this whole thing. But, you know, it doesn't really stop there. Like with Cashew, we made it even easier. Really addresses, you know, that economic barrier you have. So, you know, self-custody in itself has really high cost, you know, in terms of the transaction fees, in terms of the responsibility. For someone who wants to just start accepting payments, especially in, you know, the little economies we're building up with stuff like Noster, and you can get one sat zaps, you know, it's not really conducive to being like, oh, okay, I got to put, you know, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 sats for a Lightning channel. And I don't want to do that. Like, how are you going to convince someone to take this plunge into Bitcoin and set up a self-custodial channel when it has this cost, unless, you know, whoever's onboarding them is willing to bear it? So now with Cashew, of course, you have trade-offs. It's custodial. You don't have access to the, you know, the underlying asset, but you get to, you know, skip this cost. You get a Lightning address that you could take with you as you upgrade down the road. You can take that Lightning address, put it into Noster, start getting your first zapped, have your first aha moment with Lightning and be like, oh, this is permissionless. I could do these instant transfers. It's very cheap. I can get paid for my content. I think that's super powerful. And then we as the wallet, we can sort of give the user guidance. You know, it's one thing to like wrap your head around starting to use a new currency. You don't really necessarily need to be inundated with like, okay, receiving capacity, sending capacity. What the hell is a channel? It's sort of nice that you could push that back now and say, okay, get started, do it this way. Maybe you should copy your seed down, right? But other than that, it's pretty seamless, easy. You don't have to worry about that stuff. But then, you know, as you're carrying a larger balance, as it makes sense for you to do so, like economically, when like economic self-custody is feasible, which is like a whole other can of worms. We'd get into that if you ever want with the new L2s coming up. But yeah, when it's time, like we'll give you that educational material. It's like, oh, this is what self-custody is. This is what you have right now. We have now Cashew has really great privacy properties, but it's still sort of like a bank account. You don't really have control of your funds. But if you press this button, you can hop over and for a fee, get a channel, go to self-custody, become sovereign and really control your, you know, financial destiny. You have full control of your money in a way that most people really have never had before, in a way that's, you know, even greater than holding cash. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's been really well received the last couple of weeks. Like, what is it, 3 weeks since we launched it onto the app stores. And then we did like about, 2 months before that of beta. And, people are just loving it. It's not just one or the other. Like, you can upgrade to self-custody and still reap the benefits of Cashew and have like a super easy to use Lightning address. You can then have the wallet automatically sweep your Cashew balance to self-custody when it makes sense at whatever threshold you want to incur the fees at.
Which is huge, like having that auto sweep capability, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's not that I can't spin up a node and just have that on all the time, but I just like the convenience of having it like that too. Like, I'm using the Cashew auto sweep functionality myself on my Zaps right now. And it's just fantastic. I think it's like a very happy medium. And, it's like, I think this is also really uniquely positioned here. Like, how many other wallets are really going to tell you, oh, time to get into self-custody, Like, it's only when you get into those jams on these other platforms where they restrict access to your region, your account gets flagged. Basically when you get rugged that, you've learned the importance of holding your own keys and having control of the asset of being self-custodial in Bitcoin. And, Zeus is uniquely positioned because we have this, incentive to move you on to self-custody, right? We're not running any of the mints. We're just letting third parties run that. The user selects their own mints. But we have the Lightning service provider and we connect people with those self-custodial Lightning channels. So we sort of have this incentive to educate the users, prod them. Maybe there are cases in which like there's regulatory concerns that some of these wallets might have, be like, oh, we want to wind down the custodial part. We'll push you out the door. But like financially, most of these other services are collecting fees, like for each transaction that goes through their node. They probably want to keep you in there as long as possible. And Zeus has the complete opposite outlook. Our incentives are, push you to self-custody, have you pay for the channels on the LSP. Or even if you don't go that route, you still have the freedom to, open up your own channels and go self-custodial in however form you want. If you want to be hands-on and get all that crazy granular control we give you. Or, you could even just swap out. Like, you don't have to be using self-custodial Lightning necessarily. Even though it's my preferred way to go, you might just want to be someone who's like, okay, I'm going to build up this Cashew balance. I'm willing to incur a little more risk. I'll go up to 100,000 sats and then I'll just swap out and I'll go to on-chain on my hardware wallet or whatever. And that's an option too. And, really the thing with Zeus that, we're rooted in self-custody. Like, that's how we started the app. Being that cypherpunk, connect to your node remotely. But we also realize that people are going to use Bitcoin a whole lot of different ways. And if we're going to get angry or like moralized or look down about people, like, that's not the right way to go. I think it's better to sort of meet people where they're at and then give them the resources, the education, so they can make their informed decisions. And then you sort of have this crazy user experience where you're like, Zeus can be the place where you start your Bitcoin journey not knowing anything. And then you level up as you go. You can go to the node in the phone. You could become a remote node runner. It's sort of like an all-in-one experience now. And we're sort of like your Bitcoin Sherpa guiding you as you go along. And I think that's super unique.
I like the Sherpa analogy there. And I think it's really important what you said about meeting people where they are. It's like you need to meet people where they are, not where you want them to be, not where you ideally believe they should be, not where like you think that they must be or they're completely LARPs. Because most people like don't actually care about that and that doesn't actually help adoption. Like, but if you can meet them where they are right now, addressing the needs that they have at the moment, then they're going to actually use your product. And then they, like all of us did, like maybe there's some people who heard about Bitcoin and immediately went, all the way down that rabbit hole, wherever it ends. I was not one of them. I think for most people, it's a journey, right? It's a journey down that rabbit hole. It's a journey of going deeper and deeper, understanding more, being comfortable with more. Like, I remember setting up my first time I set up a node and a Lightning node. I did the whole Raspi Blitz thing. Had no idea what I was doing. You know, was going around on various forums, figuring stuff out. Like, mm-hmm. you know, but got it to work, and like that was really fun, and it taught me a lot about it. Most people aren't going to do that though.
Yeah, but of course.
A lot of people still may have a desire to have something in the middle that still gives them some of the same benefits of having something that they're running themselves, but without a lot of those setup hurdles, let's say. And actually, I want to kind of dive in a little bit to the eCash part of this, because correct me if I'm wrong, you were not always the biggest eCash fan, correct?
I'm still not. Yes and no, right?
Like, so talk to me about that. What changed your mind where you brought this into Zeus?
Well, I think it's multiple things, right? Like, you know, I've had such a funny history with it, and you know, I've always like worn my heart on my sleeve, but you know, I'll also be the first to admit that, you know, my opinions have changed over the years. I don't think it's so crazy to get new info and evolve and grow, right? But yeah, I'll be the first to admit, like, I'm the told collie to his face. So I think eCash is bullshit, you know, and had like giant tirades against it. But at the same time, I can still see the immense value in it. I think it's, in the online age, like, it's very easy to try to put things in a box and paint things as black or white. But, you know, reality is not like that at all. There's so much nuance and layers to it. Obviously, if the whole world is just using cashew mints, that wouldn't be the ideal world, right? Ideally, we'd get to a point where people can use Bitcoin self-custodially and hold their own keys and they can't get rugged, right? At the same time, if the whole world was using Bitcoin eCash, would still be pretty sweet compared to where we are now. It'd be a much better alternative to the fiat banking system as it exists today, and would be way, 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 way better than the dystopian potential futures we have with these CBDCs. yeah, CBD is not too dystopian.
No, I just to jump in there, for anybody who is like perhaps still confused about cashew, and maybe we can go into some of the high level, but like there's a bunch of other things I want to get into with you here today. I did do a full like 90 plus minute deep dive with Callie on eCash. So for anyone that is like still confused about that and like wants to go back and kind of dig into that really deeply and figure out exactly what's going on there, check it out. Also, what you'll hear that Callie himself says is, look, this is like, you can get rugged. This is not rug-free. This is not a risk-free thing.
Right, right.
But again, it's like, it's serving a purpose. It's not supposed to be layer one Bitcoin or to compete with layer one Bitcoin, but it's building a really great tool that leverages Bitcoin as money, but doesn't have all of the benefits of layer one Bitcoin. Because of course there's trade-offs as you go down in layers, right?
Absolutely. Everywhere. There's no perfect solutions in engineering at all, you know, you just have trade-offs and you sort of just got to figure out what tool best suits the job. And instead of moralizing about saying, oh, everyone should be using a hammer, you know, you should figure out what everyone's trying to do and where they're at. And we could say, hey, the hammer's really great. You might want to use this for hitting nails, putting some wood together. You got to understand that, you know, maybe people aren't ready for it right away. Not to just like give up and say, oh, this person's never going to use a hammer. It's like, just not now, you know, just slow your time horizon and give people time to gestate and give them resources and give them encouragement and try to explain why these tools are important and why they should consider going down this path. And I think, you know, it just, so much easier to go online and say, hey, you're an idiot. You're not using Bitcoin like me. You're not holding your own keys. You're not self-custodying yet. Yeah, probably some of those labels are okay to throw at someone when they're putting, you know, serious amounts of their wealth relative to their net worth into these systems. But, you know, people are going to do stupid things anyway. The best you can do is educate them, show them the way. You know, it's like you attract more flies with honey sort of thing. And I think if we just, if Bitcoin stays where it's at with the small community it has and it's just used as it is now, you know, stored value, ETFs, rock under the bed, shiny rock under the bed, gold 2.0, like I'll consider it a colossal failure. So we need to build out these circular economies and make sure Bitcoin gets used for commerce everywhere. And if you expect people to just go in full throttle, you know, run your own Lightning node, do it all privately, self-hosted, self-custodial, spit out coin joins, go to cold storage on day one, then you're deluded. But at the same time, this technology, and or at least the base knowledge of it, cursory knowledge of it, is becoming ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And the average person on the street sees that it's not going away. They're seeing that these articles that have been written about Bitcoin dying or just being for drug money or scams, they're seeing that that's all fake and that there's something to this. It has staying power. More people are adopting it, as we see in just the last couple of months, Stake and Shake. It's big chains that have 400 branches plus. When you hear stories that Square is finally gearing up to turn on by default on their 4 million terminals, and I think that's going to include web checkouts too. And then just like anecdotally from what we're seeing in terms of usage from both the like consumer level, like the app level, but also businesses calling us up and asking, like, hey, how do I do this? Like, I saw Stake and Shake doing this, and I see you guys are doing something similar. Or I saw, you know, a Zeus user paying to these terminals. Can you help us set up? Or I saw payments at PubKey, and I saw you guys were running the payments for them. We're having a lot of really interesting conversations right now, and I'm hoping, you know, we can make some more announcements in the coming weeks and months about some of the people we're onboarding right now. Obviously, there's a lot of work to do, and, you know, things are still very nascent, and we have a long way to go, both as a company at Zeus, Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, the whole thing growing. But it feels like we're making some real strides right now, and it's really exciting. So it's a great time to be involved, and feels nice to help push the needle a little bit.
If you're stuck spending dollars, at least stop earning dirty fiat rewards. Use Fold to earn Bitcoin on everyday purchases and regular expenses, like groceries, bills, travel, home improvement. I literally just earned 2,203 sats buying a $100 Amazon gift card on Fold. You don't even need to use the Fold card itself if you don't want to. You can connect your favorite credit card and double dip with Bitcoin rewards on merchant offers. Or go all in. Make Fold the center of your personal finances. Buy, earn, save, and even get paid in Bitcoin with Fold. Head to the link in the show notes to get started with the ultimate savings toolkit. Or go directly to use.foldapp.com/r/walker and get yourself $10 in Bitcoin when you sign up. If you've accepted that we're living through the fourth turning, then it's time to get yourself some Bitcoin and then go to bitbox.swiss/walker and use the promo code Walker for 5% off the easy-to-use, fully open-source, Bitcoin-only Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. Then get your Bitcoin off the exchange into your own self-custody and prepare yourself for the chaos that is to come. The world is going pretty wild right now, but Bitcoin is ripping, and your stack will soon be worth a heck of a lot more in fiat value than it is today as every currency around the world hyperinflates. So now is the perfect time to get your security locked down tight with Bitbox. I really want to emphasize that the Bitbox O2 is easy as hell to use, whether you're brand new to Bitcoin, it's your first time setting up a hardware wallet, or you are a well-seasoned psychopath. It is Bitcoin only and fully open source. No need to trust me. You can head to their GitHub and verify that for yourself. When you go to bitbox.swiss/walker and use the promo code Walker, not only do you get 5% off, but you also help support this podcast. So thank you. No doubt. And I'm curious too. I mean, do you think, because I've seen this debated and it's something that I debate about with myself occasionally, but I mean, do you think Bitcoin is at this point mainstream in terms of at least it's that people know about it? Because I've seen, you know, back and forth on this, like if you see some of like Joe Nakamoto, who shout out to Joe, he does incredible work. If you see some of his videos, like where he does man on the street type stuff and goes up and just talks to random people, it's like, there's still so many people who literally, he says Bitcoin to them and they're like, what is that? I've literally never heard that word before in my life. And I'm like, how have you never heard that word? Like, but you realize like from an adoption standpoint, we're objectively still early in terms of like, we're at probably less like a fraction of a percent of the world that actually owns Bitcoin in some way. Maybe with the ETFs that's changed a little bit, but it's still a pretty small amount of people who at least know they have exposure to Bitcoin. Maybe there's others that have exposure that don't know about it yet. I don't know, but like,
that's going to change too with like, yeah, and stuff. But
where do you think we're at in that though? Like, cause to me, it still feels very early. And I think it's great that these tools are being, these tools are being built so that when people do decide to actually pay attention to Bitcoin, they have more options available to them than just, okay, I'm going to go buy the Bitcoin, a Bitcoin ETF, which is, you want to do that, that's fine. Like, but
yeah, it's such an interesting spot right now, right? Because I feel like, at least anecdotally, like my experience, like you'll say the word Bitcoin to the average person, they at least have like heard of it. They're like, oh, it's some internet money, digital money. What they think of it, you know, has probably ranged wildly. Most people have like talk about like risk aversion. All I heard from, you know, financial person, I shouldn't invest in it, or I shouldn't invest more than I'm willing to lose in it. Like that's probably the general sentiment. So it's like, where are we in this adoption curve? And you can't really draw too many parallels to other technologies. I think like looking back, like email would probably be an interesting one. Like we're in the phase where people have all maybe heard of it because of articles written in, you know, the news, magazines and whatnot. It's like, oh, the mail is in the computer, but people haven't done it yet. They haven't gotten their, they haven't gotten internet in their home yet. You know, like that's sort of where we're at. I think there might also be a lot of interesting parallels to like file sharing. You know, some people are there, they might be using Napster, but it's really just the more hardcore people that have been exposed to it. But you know, we still really haven't had our like Spotify moment or Apple iTunes moment yet. Not really. I mean, there are some big players in right now, but adoption, like usage, really isn't that widespread yet. And I think like the reason you can't really like draw parallels to either of these technologies one-to-one is that when money is involved, stakes are higher and people are going to be more risk averse, right? It's much less risky to send an email, for example. There's like almost no risk there. With file sharing, it's a little risk. Maybe you're worried about getting caught by you know, the cops getting a letter from your ISP or whatever, getting sued like what Metallica did. But with money, I think most people jump in there and be like, oh no, I can't afford this. I can't take this risk. I don't have the budget for it. I'm just trying to make ends meet. And, you know, people don't realize that they can receive like less than a cent of Bitcoin on the Lightning Network or with the cashew token, and that you don't have to just dive in with your whole life savings like a lot of us have. So yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, it's really going to take more time. And the other interesting parallel that's like completely unique. It's not like when email was out that all these email like things and scams were like forcing people out, you know?
Like that's actually such a good point. Is
like, I got malware from Kazaa or whatever. Like, no, like there's so much damn noise with crypto and these scams and FTX and every cycle, and it's going to just keep repeating and repeating and repeating. And you know that distinction is really tough to make, and it takes time and education and all these other efforts, and really it takes people like actually trying and getting a better grasp of the technology themselves, and like at least understanding like you know the properties of it. Like obviously the average person doesn't know how email works and how it gets from one inbox to another. Similarly, they're not going to know how Bitcoin works or how it goes from the blockchain all the way up to the cashew mint or something like that. But at the same time, people are still going to use it. People are using it today. And it's just going to be a long haul. We got to be in it for the long haul. Understand that things are changing in this industry incredibly rapidly, even though adoption takes a really long time. And, you know, it's sort of funny at how it's at odds with how things sort of work in the fiat economy with VC money and all these hype cycles and trying to take people's attention away. It's really at odds with each other. And really the people who are going to succeed are going to be the ones who can, you know, stay alive and be in it for the long haul and also be adaptable, you know, sort of meet people where they're at and actually listen to what people need and expect and what their problems are. And not just say, oh, yeah, the problem is central banking. The problem is your wealth is being diluted away. The problem is you're in a hamster wheel and you're barely making ends meet and you're living paycheck to paycheck. And yeah, of course, that's really the problem for most people. But it's also like a bitter pill to swallow, and it could be overwhelming, and people might not be looking at their lives at that level and probably have a lot of distractions going on. You know, it's really a big uphill battle in a lot of ways trying to orange pill someone. And I know most of the Bitcoiners I've talked to and hang out with, like they've given up on that. Like, I feel like everyone goes through this period when they first learn about it. They're like, oh my God, this technology is amazing. It's empowering. It can break me out of my 9-to-5 shackles, my debt shackles, societal expectations, the fruits of my labor not being stolen from me in this indirect taxation. And, you know, as you extrapolate, you're like, oh, this could potentially have geopolitical impacts. This could change the whole fucking world. And you want to go tell everyone. You get so excited. You're like, have you heard about Bitcoin yet? And you just become that annoying guy. And everyone's like, shut the fuck up, dude. Every conversation you try to inject this. And, you know, most people don't care. They're like, did you watch the game last night?
Yeah. Catch that game last night, bro.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like nothing against sports. I love sports. You know, people have all these distractions that they're more worried about. And then it's sort of like a double-edged sword too. Like, okay, like let's say you get someone in at the top of a cycle and they're like, fucking Evan, that son of a bitch, you recommended Bitcoin to me and now it's down 30%. And what you're going to say like, oh, you got to lower your time preference. You just got to wait. You just hold it for 2 years. You're going to be back up 2 years. 2 years is a millennia for these people. The other side of the coin is, oh shit, look, Evan invested in Bitcoin so early. That's a lucky son of a bitch. And this, you know, they're jealous. They might not say it directly. And, you know, in that regard, people become averse to like trying to orange pill people. They have all these bad experiences, and I think as a result, people just have sort of resigned and been like, okay, you know what? I'm not really going to be too vocal about it. But instead, we'll let people come to them, which is probably a better way to go about it.
Dude, you've literally just described my entire journey, like exactly though, like literally so gung ho at first hearing about it. And you're right, because it's like you're so excited about it, and things are clicking for you, and so you're like, I need to share this with the people I care about. I need to share it with my family. Like, I need to share it with my friends. I need to share it with the lady cutting my hair, and like, you know, I need to share it with everyone. And then like, part of it is like maybe you get like rejected enough times, or like you said, okay, you tell somebody to get in at the current top, you know, which is not going to be the top. It's going to be somewhere in the middle, like 4 years from there. But like, right, you know, if somebody got in right at the top, you look like a jackass to them. Like, and you're like, oh shit, okay. And then eventually you're just kind of like, okay, you know, yeah, come my way. Like, you know, you want to do your best to get your family and your like closest friends on board. And like, what I've realized, it's like a good way of doing this is like, look, you know, I care about you. Hopefully you don't think that I'm like a lunatic. I'm literally telling you this because I love you and I want you to be able to experience this. You can turn it down if you want, but like, you can't say that to like a random person or like a not such a close friend. Cause if you start telling everybody like you love them, it just gets a little weird. But so like there's a limit to how much that works, how big that circle can spread. But, but it's tough. And this is why I love like what you're building though, because it's like, yeah, everybody may try to orange pill their friends and that spreads slowly, but like ultimately people come when they're ready. Like, right. Like we get Bitcoin at the price we deserve. We start understanding it at the price we deserve. And once you do start understanding it, like it's pretty amazing when there's great tools that already exist where you can go, oh wow, this is easy. This doesn't feel as scary as I thought it was when, you know, my friend Walker was ranting about magic internet money like that. He made it sound way too complicated, that ass. But like, so that's like, you need those tools in place because people are coming. It's just, it's not a question of if, it's just a question of when.
It's happening. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's happening. It's happening. I am curious.
The boomers, man. Even the boomers are coming. I'm telling you.
I dunk on boomers a lot, but I hope the boomers that I know listen to the show and my friends, dear friends who are boomers, know that I'm not talking about them specifically. I'm talking broadly. Like when boomers say, and I'm again, broadly boomers say like, well, you millennials, if you just didn't eat your avocado toast and, you know, pick yourself up by your bootstraps, maybe you too could buy a house for four raspberries like I did in 1971. And, you know, so shout out to the boomers. I love you. Even though you are the butt of some jokes, you know who you are and I appreciate you.
Yeah. They just don't know how good they had it. It's like, okay, yeah, maybe we have our cheap avocado toast relative to you guys, but you guys had all the assets that anyone wants, so much cheaper housing, you know, just cost of living in general. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. But, you know, I think boomers are at least seeing that this thing has staying power. It's been around a long time. We can't ban it. You can't stop it. It's not a scam. People are improving their lives over it. They are integrating it into their businesses. And, you know, I feel like they've seen it time and time again in their lives. It's like at some point you need to get a website for your business, right? You need to get on social media and use that to grow your business and reach out to more customers. And eventually it's going to become, you got to accept Bitcoin at your business. You should really have a Bitcoin treasury too. And that's sort of a funny distinction that we're having with some of the boomers that we're talking about and onboarding. They're like, oh yeah, you know, I see the volatility, you know, Evan, you sent me, $1,000 sats, you know, it was a little bit over a dollar. Now it's a little bit under a dollar. What's going on? I want to get rid of this as soon as possible. And it's like, okay. You know, they don't have to dive in all the way, but really, you know, you got to plant those seeds. Like, you should probably think about holding this. It's like, this probably won't be a huge amount of your sales right out the gate. Maybe you should just hold that part if you can, right? And, you know, obviously, it's your money. You're free to do whatever you want. We'll even help you convert it. But it might make sense to hold on to it. Maybe. So, you know, like I said, people are in different stages of their journeys. They make these realizations at different points. They're going to use it differently. Everyone's life situation is different. Every business has different requirements and needs and clientele and costs and XYZ. And, you know, we're seeing on like just cult-like behavior by so many people that it's like subsections of our community where like everyone's got to do this. Everyone's got to use it the same way. Everyone's got to be self-custodial, or everyone should just use, you know, this custody app. It's so easy. Or everyone should run Core. Or everyone should run that. Just like, no, dude, do what makes sense for you. And here's some reasons why X, Y, or Z might make sense to you. I don't know. It's just a lot. It's just so easy to just get into your corner and be like, okay, these are my people, right? This is how I do. This is who I'm going to defer to for my thinking. You know, if this person likes this, then it can't be good. It's like, well, where's the critical thinking of some people? It's pretty scary. And, you know, I feel like this is also like another side effect of the internet age. It's like people think that they can't have disagreements with people that they're friends with or they love. It's like, I'm not gonna hang out with them because they're lib or they're a magatard or whatever. It's like sort of a sad way to live your life, you know? And you know, same thing with Bitcoin. It's like, okay, like you're into Bitcoin, you like Bitcoin, that's great. That doesn't mean that, you know, we're best friends or that we're simpaticos. It's like it's also just a tool, you know. It's like, oh dude, you use email too? Oh man, we're bros. You got a Twitter account? Oh, that's sweet, dude. So
hey, that said, being a Bitcoiner, at least at this stage we're at now, I've found can be a good filter for finding some good people. Now, there's still plenty of shitty people who have Bitcoin. There's shitty people everywhere. But like, at least at the stage of earliness we're at now, it can be a cool filter for finding people that are at least roughly ideologically aligned.
Most people that got here for a reason.
Right? Yeah.
But, you know, there are outliers. So, but no, you're right. You're right. The where we are in the adoption curve, it is a really good filter. And most of the people that we have like, come out to the meetups that we do out here, you know, generally really great people. I'm sure there's like a spook or two in the middle.
I think there's always a spook or two. Like it would be crazy if there were, I mean, the CIA invented Bitcoin after all. So, you know, of course there's gotta be a spook or two there. Yeah, they got to check on how their little project's doing, right?
Yeah. Well, who knows really? I don't try to know, but you know, yeah. If you look at, you know, deception of the internet, all these other, you know, pieces of encryption, even apps like Signal, how they've been funded, you know, it's ubiquitous. It's just how society has really organized itself and the state has really grown to such a crazy level, and especially in the last 100 years, let's say. It just makes sense that, and just thinking about the stakes, of course, these people are going to be embedded everywhere. And it sort of makes operating as a Bitcoiner a little tricky, a little dicey.
I wanted to ask you about this because, like, okay, obviously the last administration in the U.S. was exponentially less friendly and was trying to make life hell, and has, you know, been prosecuting or was prosecuting various open source developers. Where are you at right now with your level of comfortability running a Bitcoin business and building awesome freedom tech for people? Like, Are you always just one administration away from like, okay, I gotta like shut this down and go somewhere else? Or like, how do you think about, cause like it can change every 4 years.
On the drop of a dime, you know?
Yeah.
Like if the state doesn't like what you're doing, they could basically stop you. Like the state by itself can always crush any single individual. But if the actions are taken on by a group and it's a distributed thing, it's multiple efforts, it becomes cultural. And it's not just, you know, one small group or one individual, then, you know, then things become inevitable and they become unstoppable. And I think, you know, we just got to keep leaning into that and, you know, not to be like an uber collectivist. I mean, that's already been an interesting talk, theme in our talk so far. But, you know, really, Bitcoin needs everyone. Bitcoin needs you. And its success is not inevitable. And the more that individuals act, we act collectively in pushing this technology, then the higher chance it is to succeed and the harder it is for the state to snuff it out. So where's my comfort level right now building this technology? It's not 100%. Right now, it's way better than it was the last couple of years. That being said, we still have a long way to go. A lot of our friends are still being prosecuted. Right, the Tornado Cash guys are still in court. The Samurai Wallet devs are still in court. Not all states or countries have the same assurances about self-custody or mining or, you know, these L2 services that we're running. And, you know, like I said, like these things could change at the drop of a hat. Maybe even this administration changes their tune. And, you know, if you look at the geopolitical climate, a lot of that stuff could be used as an excuse to crack down on us. So, you know, my message to all the builders out there, to the people pushing the software, is like, you know, when we're given an inch, let's take a mile. Let's keep pressing forward. While we have the runway, let's use it. I personally think that we're going to win a lot of battles over the next 4 years, the duration of this admin, right? We're going to still lose some, but we certainly have more runway and leeway than we previously did. So let's build, let's build, let's build, let's ship. Let's keep pushing stuff in the right direction. And we need to get this tech to a point where it's proliferated so much that it's not socially acceptable to put the clamps down on the technology, the users, the developers. So still a lot of fighting to do. We should expect things to get worse before they get better, but we can also tell ourselves and accept like things are definitely better than where they were, like, you know, 2 years ago. And when Samurai was just getting arrested and Wallet of Satoshi and Phoenix Wallet leaving the United States, like, I'm not going to lie to you, that was scary. Really scary. And to think that that's the worst of it, I mean, hopefully it is. And obviously, you know, geopolitically, like the whole world is different. Different countries are going to do crackdown. Some countries have more to lose than others. But yeah, we just got to be resilient and know that that's likely not the worst of it. We have a lot of bigger battles ahead of us to fight. I mean, what happens if hyperinflation really hits some of these Western countries? We're definitely prime scapegoats. But again, it's about education. It's like, no, you guys are the assholes who put us $30, $40, $50 trillion in debt. It wasn't us who wanted to recklessly spend. It wasn't us who wanted to give money to foreign countries when we have veterans starving at home. And, you know, at some point, the existing system is going to topple in on itself. And there's going to have to be a new restructuring. I think, again, it's like not going to happen this year, next year, probably not even during this administration. I think in the next 20 years, though, there's going to be some radical things that happen. Currency is getting repegged. I'm not necessarily set that fiat is going to go anywhere. Obviously, the incentives are too strong. But yeah, I mean, we could already see today that this technology is really having profound impacts. You know, obviously, Bitcoin is not crypto. Bitcoin is not CBDCs. Bitcoin is not stable coins. But we're seeing things like Tether might be the most successful company in the world right now. Like, they print money. The current administration sees Tether as a way to offload treasuries, have them buy treasuries and help address some of their debt issues. So to only look at Bitcoin as a medium of exchange and say, oh, it's failing, it's not having an effect on the world, is a little myopic. It's a little nearsighted. And obviously, medium of exchange is super important, and that's how the world is really going to change. But we're already seeing the effects that Bitcoin is having on finance and geopolitics. It's super interesting right now.
Did you guys ever pull out of U.S. availability during that?
No. I mean, did the thought cross my mind? Well, not really. I mean, when Phoenix pulled out, it was like an oh shit moment where I'm like, am I going to have to pull out? Like, it was really a scary day. But, you know, like I alluded to earlier, Walker, it's like, okay, this thing, if it's going to be successful, it has to be done collectively. And people are like, oh, Evan, you should have just shut up. You should have just kept operating and not made us think about it. It's like, yeah, probably that would have been the smart thing to do. But we would have been worse off if we didn't inspire some confidence in, you know, our other peers and more people, you know, decide to leave the market. We would have sucked. So, you know, obviously, everyone's situation is different. Not everyone is a U.S. citizen, but where am I going to go? You know, and the United States, they think they're the police of the world. Even if I were to go somewhere else, they'd probably still think they could go and prosecute me wherever I was in the world. So the choice was simple. It's like, no, we're standing our ground. We're going to take this risk. We're going to keep building, and it paid dividends. And, you know, hopefully we inspired confidence in some users and users of Bitcoin. And hopefully we inspired confidence in some people that were on the fence. And, you know, like I said, like, that was a test. I think we passed it with flying colors, but we got to be ready for the next test. And we got to make ourselves more resilient, and we got to have contingencies and, you know, have plans for when these events happen, what we're going to do to, you know, make sure we can keep providing these services and this technology for users. It was just a test. It was just a test.
I've got to say, for on the record, that you've got balls the size of watermelons, because like that, I mean, you know, and this is nothing, like you said, everyone's situation is different.
Yeah. Like, yes. I don't really want to judge anyone on their actions. Obviously,
But you did what you did. You know,
different legal situations, different legal guidance. But yeah, I'm happy we made the decisions we did. And, you know, it's not just me, but, you know, tons of other companies do the same. Maybe they weren't as vocal about it. And, you know, that's what it's going to take. It's going to take collective action like that. And to, like, censor yourself, take yourself out of markets preemptively without, like, the state forcing you to do so is, like, it would have been the worst thing we could have done. And I'm just so glad we didn't.
Did you guys see, just from like a user standpoint, when Phoenix and Walda Satoshi pulled out, did you guys see your user base expand like as a result of that? I assume so.
Yeah, probably like 3x or so.
Wow. So it was
at the same time, you know, it was also when we had just really hit our stride with our services and we're rolling it out.
So good timing. I mean, you know,
yeah.
Shitty situation. Good timing.
Yeah. Now people tell me about it. It's like, dude, like this sort of has added a lot to the ethos of it too. I'm like, I didn't even like think about it that way. I mean, we were just trying to figure out what the best thing to do in that environment was, and we had to make a tough decision, and it wasn't fucking easy for me to make. Like, you know, we just had our first kid in the last year, and, you know, it's around time that stuff was ruminating, and I'm like, okay, am I going to run the risk of not being there for my kid? Or am I going to just, like, bend the knee and be like, yep, we're not doing this anymore. You got to live in this world and set this awful example. It's like, it's sort of like being in between a rock and a hard place. So yeah, it wasn't easy. It's not something I took lightly. But at the same time, like I knew my decision within, you know, just a couple of hours of Phoenix, like making their decision. And it just didn't seem like there was any alternative. We had to do it. That's that.
Oh, massive respect to you, dude. And I'm glad you continued to build in the U.S. I mean, you know, purportedly we're, you know, the freest country in the world. So it is absurd that companies even felt that sort of pressure in the first place. The last administration was rough. This administration is by no means perfect. And as you you correctly said, that can change on a dime, right? Like,
right.
Like,
and you know, these guys are wild cards. We don't know, like, they're changing their views on all sorts of stuff, as you can see in the last week or two. So you never know what's gonna happen, but yeah, you can just try to, you know, figure out where your hard lines are, try to plan in advance to the best of your ability, try to gather the resources that you can. And you know, we're never going to forget the people who had our backs, who helped us out, who helped us navigate that, who reached out and even said, hey, we support you, or thank you for doing this. Those little actions, they meant the world to us. And, you know, we know who's got our back when shit hits the fan again, if it ever does, God forbid. But yeah, just like, It really just meant a lot, the support that we got, and being able to grow our user base and our company and our services was a great reward for it too. So yeah, it was tense, it was scary, but it paid dividends.
Well, I want to kind of talk about, like, okay, you've grown your user base. You've just released V0.11.0, right? What's the version number?
It's 0.11.1 right now.
Okay.
We call it 11.1. You know, who knows? Maybe we'll drop the zero at some point, just randomly, like Bitcoin Core did.
Yeah, screw it. Why not? Right? Like version numbers are just, yeah.
People are like, Evan, you don't have to go to 1.0. although we're sort of at a point where we're like, okay, we sort of want to get to a place where like, okay, this is the culmination of everything we've done. And I think, you know, I think that's a lot of our focus. Like, we had built up all these great building blocks over the years. The remote node, embedded node, the LSP services, the swap services, the cashew. And now we have all this arsenal of tools. And now I think a lot of our focus for the rest of the year is like, how do we round out the edges? How do we improve the onboarding? How do we identify the biggest pain points? How do we just like really put on our UI UX hat? And obviously, like, it's not easy. That there's a lot of people we're going to bring in and rely on and help us with this thing. But yeah, I think with our current set of tools right now, I think that like, yeah, this is the bones of the 1.0 product. It just needs that polish, and it needs, you know, those user interviews. It needs just a little love, and I think it's really going to shine. And I think like we've really built, like today, what I personally believe is the most powerful mobile Bitcoin wallet on the planet. And with just a little bit of love, we can make it the best Bitcoin wallet, period. Something that you'll be comfortable onboarding anyone, even your grandma, even my yaya. And that's always been the goal. And it feels really close now. We still have a ton of work, a lot of work that we don't typically do. And it might be a little uncomfortable, it might be difficult, but that's where the best growth happens.
What do you mean work that you don't typically do?
Like, you know, UI, UX.
Okay,
like,
okay.
Really thinking about how people on board interact with the app, you know. Like, a lot of our stuff has been like, and I don't think this is necessarily a bad way to build apps, but like really just scratching my own itch. Like I think it would be awesome if I could do this and then build it for myself first and foremost, right? And if anyone else likes it, that's just icing on the cake. Like, that's how I thought about it for like a long time. And I understand that the app can still be that. It could be the wallet of my dreams and do everything it wants, but there are like different UX flows that can definitely stand to be improved into. And there's a overwhelming amount of functionality in the app. And there's definitely stuff that we can tuck away in other menus. There's definitely things we could explain better. And it's like this sort of introspection, looking in the mirror, that we're all going to really have to do more widely for Bitcoin to reach peak adoption. And that's what we're going to be trying to do. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question on that, because like, I mean, I love Zeus as an app. It is like, for me, you know, I get it also. Like, I get what you guys are trying to do. I know enough about how things work on the back end and channels and everything else. Like, things make sense to me. Do you think, and this is not about Zeus specifically, but let's just say more broadly, like, are we ever going to be to a point where the majority of people, let's classify the majority, over 50% of people are using Bitcoin in a, how do I say this? In a way that is further along the self-sovereignty spectrum than 50%. You know what I mean? Like, they're using it, like, I think sovereignty is a spectrum, like many things. Like, you're never going to be perfectly sovereign. You can be pretty much a slave, though. Perhaps that's the other end of the spectrum. Like, how realistic is it? What actual penetration of the world in a hyper Bitcoinized future? Like, what? Maybe a better question is: what does that mean to you? Does that mean it's a majority of people that are actually using Bitcoin in a relatively self sovereign way? Or does that just mean that Bitcoin itself is ubiquitous? It's the water that the fish swim in. People are using it, but they don't even know it, and they don't care about the method in which they're using it, whether that be custodial, non-custodial, whatever. It's just, it's so ubiquitous that that's just what hyper-Bitcoinization means. Where do you fall on that?
That's a really loaded question.
I know.
But self-custody, like, let's break down, like,
yeah,
is it realistic to think that most people will hold their own keys to, you know, underlying Bitcoin? Probably not. But that doesn't mean that that's not a worthwhile ideal to strive for. And even if we'd never crossed that threshold, I think these are the things that are important. One, that the average person can do that, can decide to go and hold their own keys if they so choose. And then on the other side of it, thinking about the systemic risks of this world where people aren't holding most of their keys, where those disruptions can happen, you know, stuff like running fractional reserves, manipulating the markets. We can still strive to have those Bitcoins held by enough parties for users to have them across enough different custodians, to have the rails between them and the ability to switch custodians and leverage rails like people are using Lightning today. I think that's what's important. People are so passionate about using Bitcoin the right way, you know, running it self-custodially, run your own node, doing it privately. I think mainly because they have this fear that is, I think, very real, right? That in a lot of ways, we run the risk of recreating the existing financial system. And from that perspective, I entirely understand the toxicity, the name calling, the just trying to jump into these groups and say, ah, oh, you're in the in group, you're in the out group, you're doing things right, you're doing things wrong. So I totally sympathize with, you know, those fears at least. And, you know, that they play their roles. It's like people should really be vocal about the importance of these things. We don't want to just recreate the existing financial system and change the name of the units to Bitcoin. But at the same time, it feels like even at this point, there's a lot of freedoms that we've taken that really just can't be taken away. Like, you can't get the toothpaste out of the tube, back in the tube, excuse me. Like, from here on out, it's going to be very, very difficult to stop people from being able to create their own keys, their own 12 words, memorize them, and store their wealth. Like, you can try to intervene in that in very unique ways, pushing people onto custodial platforms, compromising networks and hardware and all this sort of stuff. But the underlying ability, it's sort of out of the tube. It's like saying, but humans learned how to make fire and we're gonna stop that from happening. It just seems ridiculous. So we should still be vigilant. We still should be concerned about this thing being co-opted, especially now, especially in this environment where heads of state are talking about Bitcoin, where we have ETFs, where we have paper Bitcoin, Bitcoin treasury companies, people taking buy pressure away from Bitcoin, the underlying asset, and putting it into these easier to get into avenues. There's a lot to have your guard up about. But sometimes you also need to kick your feet up and look back at all that's been accomplished already by this technology. And, you know, a lot of these freedoms are now inalienable and can't be taken away. And, you know, obviously, like I said earlier, a state can go and crush any single individual, but as a widespread technology, it's not going anywhere. And we can be very grateful for that. And now it's just our job to make sure it reaches its full potential.
I say amen to that, brother. And I think that is such an important point that, like, yeah, okay. It's a cliche, but united we stand, you know, like, but separated we fall. Like, it is much harder to stomp the boot of the state down on a massive group of people who are also armed with cryptographic weapons. No, those are weapons of defense, right? Those are asymmetric defense-based weapons, but weapons nonetheless.
Jason Lowry thing now?
No, well, I meant more so like they've tried to classify strong encryption as arms. Like this yeah. happened. Like, what wasn't it Adam Back who like printed out, I forget which algorithm on his like on a shirt and like was wearing it across borders. I think it was Adam Back who did that, right?
Yep, indeed it was. Dr. Back.
Just a badass move, like, honestly, to be like, nope, yep, okay, I guess I'm gonna, you know, transporting arms across borders. Like, that's amazing. And also just shows the absurdity of trying to classify code, open source code, as somehow to classify it as the same as the bombs that the US sells and drops around the world. Like, just insane.
They literally put the RSA algorithm encrypted in a Perl script that you could scan with an advanced barcode scanner and wrote on it, warning, this shirt is classified as a munition and you cannot export it from the United States or give it to a foreign national. But here it is on my shirt.
It's incredible.
They literally did that and they followed those same principles. They said it as clearly as they could with this action, said the toothpaste is out of the tube. There's nothing you can do about it. It is proliferating to all humanity. And that's just such an incredible statement. It's unbelievable. Yeah, that shirt is legendary. I think they have a new, like, updated version of it on the Blockstream store. I have it upstairs somewhere.
Nice.
It's classic. Shout out to Dr. Beck.
Do you, just a slightly kind of different route on this, obviously all of the tools that are available to individuals are available to the state, right? Strong cryptography is available to individuals. It's available to the state. Bitcoin is available to individuals. It's available to the state. All of these things are. Now, I'm curious where you sit, like CBDCs, and which are basically just like CBDCs are essentially the ultimate form of like AML KYC, right? It's like automated AML KYC using some of these same tools, like it basically inspired by Bitcoin, but CBDCs are the ultimate fiat shitcoin, right? It's taking fiat to its worst possible conclusion. It's taking the only good thing that fiat had, which was cash, Cash is great. Physical cash, I mean. That's actually great. That's anonymous. It's excellent. You should use cash more. It's taking that only good thing away from it. Where do you think we're at on this kind of you've spoken pretty strongly about KYC AML, and so I'd love to kind of get your thoughts on that, because obviously I think that's a travesty. And we see there was just another huge data breach today, and it's just a classic example. Anytime I see a data breach, I'm just like, anytime you KYC, like, that's just an invitation for a data breach. It's an invitation for you to get doxxed. It's an invitation for bad things to happen.
Yeah.
A CBDC is the ultimate form of KYCing yourself. It's KYCing every single thing you do. It's zero privacy. Where are you at on this? Do you think that America has rejected this strongly enough? What are your thoughts?
I think America's very interesting position in terms of its CBDCs. And it's like, as a result of its values, it's not like the CBDCs that we're going to see are going to be the same, like a Chinese CBDC, tied into WeChat, just perfect view into these users. I think one of the funny things that America's done that, you know, we've seen sort of as a result of like the Snowden revelations, it's like they will outsource their spying, for example, to these third parties, to these corporations, right? And they're like, oh, okay, we're not going to do this directly, but we'll easily cut a check to these telcos or these, you know, financial services companies in exchange for that data. And that'll be okay. That'll be our way to skirt around the Constitution. I feel like similarly, we're going to see the role of, you know, private issuers, companies like Tether, players like JP Morgan, BlackRock, who might get into issuing CBDCs, play that role. It might be marginally better in terms of it being distributed widely, but it's effectively going to still have those same controls, that same surveillance, because, you know, they're working so closely with the Treasury Department, with FinCEN. They have this data. They have to answer to government requests. They can freeze their currencies, like we've seen with Tether time and time again. I think this is like a really prescient time to talk about it now that I feel like the Genius Act, the new Stablecoin Act, I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but I know it just passed the Senate, I believe. I had passed the House previously, I think. And does Trump just have to sign up on it now? See, like, I'm not following it closely enough. But no, I think there's going to be a deluge of newly privately issued stablecoins. And the government's position is going to be to just try to cut deals to monitor them individually. That's my outlook on it. We're going to see what this looks like. I feel like other big players in the fintech space, like Stripe, PayPal's, all these sort of players are going to get involved, issue their own coins. But yeah, like from a surveillance perspective, you know, the government's going to hook into these companies. On the other side of things, I'm not optimistic, but I think there are opportunities for us to try to, for lack of a better word, or better way of putting it, like Bitcoinize the dollar, where we try to build these systems on top of Bitcoin or on top of eCash, and we could sort of reap the benefits of the privacy benefits of the self-custodial properties of these assets. But at the same time, we have to be realistic and be like, okay, the underlying asset is this completely untied to these blockchain assets, like the dollar. It could be printed at a whim, and self-custody really means nothing in this context. But privacy does. And if we have the opportunity for the for the dollar to be operating on Lightning, where the payer's privacy is fantastic, at least, and this receiver's privacy properties are getting much better, especially over the last couple of years, or the properties of Cashew, where you don't know how much any individual user has or who's what, and you can't stop any individual or shut down their account. You have to rug the whole mint. Like, I think there might be some interesting opportunities there, and if we can take them, we should. But at the same time, what are the incentives for the government to do that? These are going to be, if they exist, they're not going to be sanctioned stable coins. They'll be privately issued black market dollar pegs that are put together in a plethora of different models. As we see now, there's algorithmic stable coins where the issuers are just putting together short or long positions on these exchanges depending on what their assets and liabilities are. I mean, there's opportunities there, and perhaps that could be an interesting avenue to onboard people into Bitcoin, especially for Rails to dump your shitcoin, fiat, dollar coins, whatever, and flip into Bitcoin is as easy as making a payment or pressing a button. That would be phenomenal. That's definitely a lofty but worthwhile aspiration to have. But at the same time, let's not rely on that. Let's try to onboard people onto Bitcoin directly. Let's try to show them the way and go from there one day at a time, one person at a time.
And a quick just fact check for on both of us. It still has to go to the House, but it did pass the Senate 68-30.
Okay, so it didn't go through the House. Okay.
Yeah. So it's going to the House next. And honestly, I haven't followed it super closely just because it's like, I know that a lot of people are super jazzed about stable coins right now. I don't find it quite as interesting. I mean, the whole point of it is literally like, this is like Senator Gillibrand, like quoting her, it's like, you know, protect U.S. dollar dominance or safeguard dollar dominance.
Like, increase demand for treasuries. It's like, what is the appeal for us, Walker? I mean, and you know, I completely understand people in like these countries where they have like much weaker currencies just wanting it. Like, it makes sense to want Tether in Turkey, you know, like their currency is dog shit. Like, we complain about
it. It is terrible.
It's really bad in other places. And, you know, we have easy access to these dollar rails, these dollar banking and financial services. So, you know, at the same time, we're probably the worst people to be talking to about stable coins and, you know, what usage looks like. I can only just provide my guidance on like privacy perspective and how I think it's going to be surveilled. But yeah, it's obviously, like I said earlier, Tether's like the biggest company in the world. There's very real demand for it. It's not just an artificial thing propped up by the government, but the government is going to take advantage of this demand and use it to sell other treasuries. Than the lifespan of the dollar.
Yeah, and you know, to be fair, it's like the dollar is, as far as fiats go, like if the dollar has fallen, that likely means pretty much every other fiat currency in the world has already collapsed. If we're being honest, like people like to single out the dollar. It's like, okay, the dollar is going to be one of the last dominoes to fall. It's not the first. You know what I mean? We like it's that's just a reality of the situation.
It's the slowest,
like,
melting ice cube. And you know, when the dollar eventually falls, you know, it's going to be at the cusp of a dystopia or utopia, or, you know, probably just a multipolar world where it's a little bit of both, probably bad in some places, probably amazing in some others. It's a bit scary to think about, but, you know, nothing lasts forever and everything has its own lifespan. And you know, as much as I really love American values, a lot of late stage empire vibes right now, and a lot of scary things going on in the world. And obviously, change is the only constant. So, see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I won't deny the scariness of things happening in the world right now, and the late stage empire vibes as well. It's difficult for me to see the United States collapsing before basically everywhere else has collapsed, just realistically, you know. And maybe I'm totally wrong. I also, you know, it's like, if there's one thing we've realized in, you know, in this fiat world, it's, man, the powers that be are really good at kicking the can down the road. Like, really good at kicking it down the road just until they all, you know, get to retire.
In a lot of ways, like, obviously, like, okay, we want a hyper Bitcoinized world tomorrow. We want a better world for our children tomorrow, right? But at the same time, it would probably most definitely be better to have like an easy transition onto the Bitcoin standard instead of like an, oh shit, here's societal collapse and figure it out and just mass chaos. And so I think a little patience will go a long way. And, you know, like I said, I'm not expecting fiat collapse tomorrow either. I think they're going to repeg it. They're going to do all sorts of new arrangements. And, you know, we should fully expect fiat currency to be around for a long, long time, for generations and generations. That being said, humanity can still benefit from Bitcoin greatly while it's still around. That doesn't, you know, that doesn't mean we should be working to extend the lifespan of it, though. So be careful what you work on. Be careful what you wish for. And, you know, just try to be mindful and have intention with your actions.
Speaking of intention with actions, what are you most excited to kind of, you know, you mentioned some of the things you need to tweak about Zeus. And we've gone in, a big wide arc here, and we're coming back a little bit to where we started, but you've got a lot of stuff in this this latest release. You guys have done a lot over, you know, in the past couple of years. Is there something, you know, beyond the UI UX stuff that you're really you want to make sure you turn on, if you can, if something you can talk about? I know some stuff may be under the hood still, but like, is there something that you think like, oh, like we really need to get this in the app, and I can't freaking wait for it to happen? Or are you getting close to like,
getting close. Well, I definitely know where the freckles are, the spots, the things people struggle with. I think some optionality on how the embedded node works, how you sync it to chain, stuff like that. Like just a lot of technical stuff. I know that once we flesh out a little more, it's really going to shine. But no, honestly, Walker, the thing I'm most excited about right now is like talking with merchants, onboarding companies, you know, Bitcoin adoption and tooling from the consumer side, I think is actually really good right now. Tons of optionality. It's getting super easy to use. Lightning is the de facto rails for Bitcoin. Everything's interoperable. You get out of, you know, a KYC account to self-custodial Lightning wallet very easily with really good privacy. Like all that stuff is great. The business side tooling is not so great. Needs a lot of work, but has a lot of opportunity right now, a lot of demand. I think some awesome things are going to be built. And I, more than anything, more than any technology in Zeus or any products we're building, I am just really excited in general for adoption to grow on the merchant side. And that's where we're also going to be spending a lot of focus on and are actually really focusing on right now. Like we're talking with three pretty interesting merchants this week that were in various stages of onboarding. And you know, we really see this demand ramping up. And yeah, I mean, there are improvements that I'd like to see come to Lightning and even to the base protocol. Like we recently signed a letter signaling our support for a CTV CSFS soft fork. Whether I think that's going to actually come to fruition, I really don't know. I think some of the tribalism going on right now is going to make that exceptionally difficult. But
can you explain in ADIQ terms what that means?
Yeah, covenants. Covenants allow you to put spending restrictions on your Bitcoin. It's all optional. It's all opt-in, but it's going to pave the way for a lot of L2 systems to work more efficiently. This includes Lightning. This includes stuff like Arc. This includes UX for coin joints. Yeah, just a lot of things you could do much more passively with coin joins and sort of take your setup offline. Super exciting. And then just in general, what you could do with vaults. It's like spending restrictions that you can have for your personal stash to ensure that your family and your savings are safe without really having to rely on a third party. Like right now we have really good tooling that you can do with collaborative multi-sig. like these companies like Unchained or Casa, signing tools, like stuff like Nunchuck mobile wallet makes multi-sig really easy. Phoenix hardware wallets that allow you to do all these crazy things. But a lot of them like really require third-party help. If you have a vault, you can say, hey, my money is in this vault. It has a 3-day, 14-day, 3-month, 6-month cooldown period, and I can send something out into transit. I don't need to get this money until the end of that period. But if I see anything is messed up, claw it back. I have an exit path. Bring it back, put it back in the vault, or kick it out somewhere else where I know it's safe. And the ability to create this time-limited place for your Bitcoin to live for these big transfers is huge. There's really reduces the ability for someone to break into your house, to stick a gun to your head. It's like, no, it's in the vault. Like someone else, or if it's not me, claw it back within that time period. And it gives you just like a whole lot of assurances. It puts time on your side when you're doing self-custody. And I think that vaults alone are worth activating OPCTV for. I truly do. I think for self-custody to really flourish and for the individual to really take it into their own hands and reap these benefits, get rid of these security concerns, vaults and covenants go so, so far. And that's why I've been a real ardent supporter of them. On top of the benefits we get with L2s, ARC, Lightning, coin joins, new constructions we haven't even thought of. And yeah, I just don't want Bitcoin to stagnate either. The discussions have been really interesting right now because a lot of people are opposed to change on Bitcoin because the secondary effects of, say, something like Taproot and, you know, enabling or at least making stuff like ordinals or rather inscriptions easier has left like a lot of people like risk averse and not wanting to change Bitcoin at all. And I understand that. But still, like, Bitcoin usage overall in the world is still super low. Bitcoin is a medium of exchange, still not widely adopted. And I really think that these opcodes are simple. They're well-reviewed. I don't think they're, although you can never know for sure, I don't see any major impacts in the same way that a new scripting type has. I think Taproot was a much bigger can of worms. Yeah, of course. So I love this technology, want to protect it, but also want it to be as easy to use in its use case as money as it can be. And I think that the software does that. It's very much worth considering. And I've been loving the discussions that we've been having the last week or two since this letter we signed has been out. Obviously, a lot of pushback, but just the fact that these discussions have been happening have been fantastic, and I think it's much more productive than arguing about relay policy or some of the other even more shallow topics the community's been talking about. So it's been really great to champion that and see where that goes. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Hopefully, we have an activation client maybe end of the year, probably next year. We'll see. But even if we don't get it activated, still a ton of stuff that we have to work on in Bitcoin and still a lot of things we can do to make adoption more widespread.
Do you think the filters debate is a important one right now, or do you view that as a bit of a distraction?
It's not entirely a distraction, and I'm very sympathetic to the view that Bitcoin shouldn't just be a general storage database. But at the same time, there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of noise. There's a lot of tribalism. Really, at the end of the day, it's your node. It's your rules. you should run the policies that you want. I fully believe in the ability for people to run whatever node implementation they want. I probably, you know, the one single implementation for everyone is probably not the best way to go. I think it's better to have competing implementations. Centralizing power, of course, is dangerous. There have been some red flags for sure that out of the core camp and how that's organized, but at the same time, it's definitely been overstated. You know, there's a lot of nuance to it, but it's definitely not the end of the world, the relay policies. You can just run an older version of core, or, you know, if you're technically inclined, you can run the latest version without the commits that you don't like on it. But generally speaking, like I've been saying this whole show, people are going to use Bitcoin differently. This isn't a consensus change. Bitcoin isn't really changing at its core. Your node, your rules, you should use Bitcoin in the way that makes most sense for you. I'd love to see a lot of people spinning up their own nodes, though. It's fantastic. Spin up a node, run it, use it for your transactions. If you're just spinning up the node and just having it talk on the internet and you're not doing with it anything with it, just to increase a number on a chart, on a pie chart, like, who cares about that? But if you're using it, that's amazing. You validate your own transactions, hold your own keys. It's all we've ever really wanted.
Man, that's a heck of a note, I think, to wrap up on. We've been running here for a little over 90. Is there anything we didn't cover that you wanted to make sure we touched on, either about, you know, Zeus, or where do you want to send people? Feel free to shill anything you want right now.
Do it. Check out the wallet. We're at ZeusLN.com. We're on Noster. We're on X. We have a Telegram group. Everything is linked on the website. That's ZeusLN.com. Check out the wallet. You can get started with a Cashew wallet. You get a free Lightning address. You could put that in your Noster bio. You can start accepting Zaps. And when you get enough Sats that it becomes economically viable to upgrade to self-custody, we're going to bug you about it. But once you get your own Lightning channel, you got some funds in self-custody, those messages are going to go away. You can reap the benefits. Keep that Cashew wallet. Sweep to self-custody whenever it makes sense for you. And you could keep going on that journey. You can become that self-sovereign full node runner. You can point your Lightning address that you've kept this whole journey to your full remote node using Noster Wallet Connect. And yeah, we've got a whole lot of other tools that we're working on. Our point of sale products are going to be improving. We were working with new merchants. We just started doing our proof of concept for selling digital goods on ZeusPay.com. Go check out Bitcoin for Institutions by our friend Fundamentals. That's all linked on our social profiles. Go check that out. And yeah, just, you know, think critically, use Bitcoin in a way that makes sense for you. And, you know, make Bitcoin payments your way. That's it.
Amen to that. Evan, thanks so much for coming on here, man. Great. Great to finally get you on the show.
I really appreciate it. The only thing I'm really confused about is, like, it's the Titcoin podcast. I don't think I mentioned breasts once on the full show. Maybe when you have me back, we can hit on that, I guess.
You come for the tits, you stay for the bits. That's how, you know, it's really just to hook people in who would otherwise find Bitcoin itself too boring. I do have BIP 6969 as well. Which, yeah, it's a pretty serious BIP that I've published. So if you ever want to check that out, it's pretty fascinating.
Okay, I have some reading to do tonight.
Seriously, though, man, appreciate you coming on here. Welcome back anytime.
My pleasure. Thanks again, Walker. It's been great.
Likewise, man. Talk soon. And that's a wrap on this Bitcoin Talk episode of the Bitcoin Podcast. Remember to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're watching or listening, and share it with your friends, family, and strangers on the internet. Find me on Noster at primal.net/walker and this podcast at primal.net/titcoin. On X, YouTube, and Rumble, just search at Walker America. And find this podcast on X and Instagram at Titcoin Podcast. Head to the show notes to grab sponsor links. Head to substack.com/@WalkerAmerica to get episodes emailed to you. And head to bitcoinpodcast.net for everything else. Bitcoin is scarce, but podcasts are abundant. So thank you for spending your scarce time listening to the Bitcoin Podcast. Until next time, stay free.